Let's all go to the lava.
Welcome to the Saturday Frights Podcast. I am the Projectionist, your co-host for this radio program. Now, come, join your host, Vic Sage, as we enter the vault to once again discuss retro horror films and television programs. Ask intern Rockford J to repeat himself.
I was just about to do that, Projectionist. Rockford, could you repeat that again?
We have a confirmed sighting of the ghoul fever-infected rat down on level 5. Regina from the HR department was scared by it as it went past her.
Copy that, Rockford. Now, could you tell us what Regina said again?
She just finished lunch in the commissary. Apparently the new Pub and Taco opened up, and as a kid she'd eaten there, so she wanted to see if it was as good as she remembered.
Intern Rockford J, unless you wish to spend the remainder of the week occupying the quiet hole in my wing of the vault, do your best to get to the point.
Oh, sorry, Projectionist. So, Regina was heading back to level 4 when the ghoul fever-infected rat darted out of a maintenance shed in a vault shuttle, as in the rat was driving the vault shuttle, which is why I felt it better to contact you at once. Regina was pretty freaked out, so I sent her to the infirmary.
It was driving the shuttle? How in the world can a rat drive a shuttle, Projectionist?
I know it's not my place to say, but I'm pretty sure we need to bring in some help on this because Regina said it's grown in size, Vic.
Did Regina from the HR department mention how large it has grown, intern Rockford J?
She said it was the size of a St. Bernard.
What?
And she said it was sitting upright as it drove the shuttle past her. That maintenance shed was filled with graffiti. I've sent in a containment crew to burn it off the walls like usual.
Remind them to not look directly at the graffiti.
Thanks for calling this in, Rockford. Let us know if Regina is okay.
I know what you're thinking, sir. The docs in the infirmary say she's totally okay, except for the shock of seeing the thing drive by.
It occurs to me, Rockford J, perhaps it would be wise for you to track down that missing shutter, yes?
Oh, I'll get right on it after I finish cleaning the filters in your wing of the vault.
Rockford, I hope you realize that isn't part of your job description. You're supposed to be up here in the control room with me.
Now, Victor. Intern Rockford J is quite busy, as you could hear. Let's not get in the way of his work. Besides, look on the control panel. The recording light is on, which means it's time once again for our Saturday Frights radio broadcast.
We're going to have a long talk after the show, my friend. Listeners, thank you for joining us once again on the Saturday Frights podcast. We hope you've been enjoying the matinee episodes so far, but for this show, we're going to be tackling a 1986 episode of The Twilight Zone entitled Grandma. Projectionist, this was another new one for you, right?
That is quite correct, Sage. I will tell you up front, dear listeners, that, unlike the Twilight Zone segment known as The Shadow Man, I was not as enamored with Grandma as my more easily impressed host.
Well, you pointed out something while we were screening it for the vault staff. We will get into that when we dive into the synopsis for Grandma. This episode was one I did catch in my youth back in the day. I remember Grandma so well because, unlike with The Shadow Man, where I watched it in the electronics section of our local Walmart, when this originally aired on February 14th of 1986, I had managed to miss it. But I caught it on a rerun during the summer, a very hot and miserable summer in 1986, which also happened to coincide with our air conditioning breaking in our house. So while my father was out in the backyard under some shade, working on a lawnmower that had given up the ghost, I was sitting in the house, with all the lights off, windows open, and even the doors open thanks to the screen doors. I also had an enormous box fan next to my head in a failing attempt to stop me from sweating. Friends, I've jokingly said this before, but heat is my kryptonite. It just literally drains all energy from me. Give me cold weather any day.
Oh, the soothing comfort of a darkened movie theater with its air conditioning pumping out relief.
Totally, my friend. Anyway, I was guzzling grape soda and doing my very best not to move in that punishing humid evening, but I perked up when after that new Twilight Zone theme finished because I realized I hadn't seen this episode before. Then the title cards popped up after the cast list and my head reeled. Grandma features a script by Harlan Ellison.
Indeed, dear listeners, the Harlan Ellison, author of I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
The one and the same projectionist. Ellison was widely known for both his strength of conviction and not suffering fools gladly, and it certainly appeared easy to be included on that list. In addition to providing scripts for the original Star Trek series, with The City on the Edge of Forever, a screenplay that found the author clashing with Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry. In fact, he refused to have his name on the episode. He did work on the 1985 Twilight Zone revival before Grandma, with his teleplay for an episode that aired in 1985, which was Paladin of the Lost Hour, based on his own story. City on the Edge of Forever won both the Writers Guild of America Award for Best Episodic Drama on Television, as well as the Hugo Award. And at that awards ceremony, he remarked, as he accepted it, that this was for, quote, the memory of the script they butchered, and in respect to those parts of it that had the vitality to shine through the evisceration, end quote. I knew him thanks to some interviews through Entertainment Tonight. After learning that Ellison had written the script for Grandma, I had another surprise in store. This segment was based on a short story by Stephen King. That was a name I was quite familiar with, thanks to Stephen King's Night Shift collection. My first foray into the works of King, but definitely not my last. To be fair, I also knew his name thanks to catching 1982's Creepshow at the 112 drive-in. That was followed by seeing Cujo at the same drive-in, and one of my favorite adaptations, 1983's The Dead Zone by David Cronenberg. Grandma was collected in 1985's Skeleton Crew, although it originally appeared in a 1984 magazine entitled Weird Book. Actually, shortly after seeing this Twilight Zone episode, I would get my hands on Skeleton Crew.
There is a point to this drawn-out anecdote, yes?
There is, projectionist. Stephen King, like so many people, was influenced by the Twilight Zone in his youth, even if it appears in the pages of the excellent Danse Macabre that he preferred The Outer Limits and Thriller TV series to the Twilight Zone. In that book, he says of the classic series, quote, of all the dramatic programs which have ever run on American TV, it is the one which comes closest to defying any overall analysis. It was not a Western or a cop show, although some of the stories had Western formats or featured cops and robbers. It was not really a science fiction show, although the complete directory to primetime network TV shows categorizes it as such. Not a sitcom, although some episodes were funny. Not really a cult, although it did occult stories frequently in its peculiar fashion. Not really supernatural. It was its own thing. And in large part, that fact alone seems to account for the fact that a whole generation is able to associate the Serling program with the budding of the 60s, at least as the 60s are remembered. End quote. As I've said before, since I grew up listening to bedtime stories of the Twilight Zone episodes my father remembered, not that I knew that at the time, I place Rod Serling's anthology series a little ahead of both Thriller and The Outer Limits. Naturally, it shouldn't come as too much surprise, though, that Stephen King greatly admired one of the original Twilight Zone writers. That was Richard Matheson. 1986's Grandma is the only Stephen King story that was adapted for The Twilight Zone, at least so far. Friends, another reason that I took greater interest in this Twilight Zone segment, which, with a 20-minute running time, meant it took up the majority of the episode, was that Barrett Oliver was playing the main protagonist, Georgie. Oliver was well known at that point, as he not only played Bastion in 1984's The Neverending Story, but starred in Daryl and in Cocoon the following year.
Do not forget that Darlan Flugel appears in this Twilight Zone segment as well. She was very popular during the 1980s, featured in such films as Battle Beyond the Stars, Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America, and William Friedkin's To Live and Die in L.A.
Projectionist, don't forget she was also in the excellent buddy comedy Tough Guys with Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas. Although, besides Grandma, she revisited the horror genre with 1992's Pet Sematary 2. Sadly, Flugel passed away back in 2017 at the too young age of 64. Grandma was directed by Bradford May, who appears to have had a long career in directing and television. He did two additional 1980s Twilight Zone episodes, The Card and Night Song, but he also directed a 1988 episode of Friday the 13th, the series, entitled The Baron's Bride, as well as six episodes of The Equalizer, and going on to direct the straight-to-video sequels for Darkman, starting in 1995 with Darkman 2, The Return of Durant, and 1996's Darkman 3, Die, Darkman, Die. That latter film, by the way, also featured Flugel. Projectionist, I suppose it's time to dive right into the synopsis for Grandma. Do you have anything to add?
Just that I know that the listening audience has reached over to switch off the radio sets, Victor.
Yeah. Friends, of course, if you've not seen Grandma for yourself, remember that as always, this will be a detailed synopsis, so it's chock full of spoilers. So, you've been warned. As Grandma begins, we are introduced to Georgie and his mother, played by Flugel. It appears that his older brother Buddy has broken his leg while playing Little League baseball, requiring that his mother leave Georgie alone with Grandma, her bedridden mother. Georgie, being an 11-year-old boy, is annoyed at the suggestion that he can't handle being left alone, and that his mother would doubt that he can see to his grandmother, in particular, bringing her tea when asked. He does his best to assure her that he has the phone number for Dr. Arlender in the case his grandmother has a medical emergency.
He also insists that he has reached an age where he is no longer afraid of Grandma, although he has every reason to be wary of her.
You're getting a little ahead of yourself there, projectionist, as usual. Real quick, I want to point out that Bradford May does a really great job as director, thanks to Ellison's screenplay, of course, of setting all the pieces up quickly and concisely. Within 4 minutes, we are familiar with the old house, the rather ominous hallway that leads to Grandma's bedroom, the kitchen where 95% of the segment takes place, plus two more elements. This is a rural home, apparently, as the single phone in the kitchen is still using a party line, and there is one heck of a storm brewing outside. Heavy wind and dark clouds rolling in to heighten the tension of what is about to take place. While Georgie is doing his best to keep his mind off having to actually interact with his grandmother, hoping that she stays asleep, whiling the time away by doing a little homework, we the viewers get our first introduction to Grandma. We don't ever really see her, at least not completely, but we certainly get to hear her. Jumps with a start towards the door as his grandmother calls out for him to bring her some tea. So while he may have put on a brave face for his mother, he is absolutely terrified of his grandma. He manages to find his courage, very slowly, cautiously making his way to the entrance to the hallway, as the old woman, in that strained voice, calls out again. Something curious happens as he hesitates at the threshold to the hallway. His shadow, cast from the kitchen light, grows until the entire shadow literally slides down the hallway floor and under the door of her bedroom.
The young boy bats away in horror, huddling in fear in a corner of the kitchen.
Do you blame him? I think I would have fled the house at that point myself. Georgie's grandmother's voice changes. It becomes less a throaty wail and more demanding. T. T. This, as well as him remembering his promise to his mother, is what stirs Georgie to action, quickly turning on the flame of the kitchen stove under the tea kettle. We can see the poor kid is almost going into a panic attack, barely holding on to his courage and not fleeing the house. With teacup in hand and walking to his grandmother's bedroom, like a convict approaching the electric chair, we get to hear a conversation that he overheard with his mother and her brother and sister from the past, and realize that Georgie has every right to be afraid of his grandmother, that maybe it's best for everyone not to rile her up.
Ruth, you have to take her. I got kids. She scares them.
And how do you think Georgie feels? Every time she reaches out to hug him, he runs howling. Your kids. My kids.
It won't be for long, Ruth. She's totally blind and a hypertension, and God only knows how her heart can keep up with all that
weight. You know how to deal with her best, Ruth. You know how to shut her up. Oh, how I treasure you, my dearest loving brothers and sister. You're turning me into a sharecropper in my own life.
She's more dangerous now that she's senile.
What makes you think she's senile?
Just because none of the neighbors' houses haven't burned to the ground? Just because their dogs haven't come home lately with pieces of human meat in their mouths? Just because no babies have been born with fingers? Is that what makes you think the trail of evil is stopped?
By the way, I've not been able to find anything online, but I'm absolutely positive the voice of her brother in that clip is courtesy of Ethan Phillips, probably best known as Peter John Downey from the long-running Benson, or as Neelix from the even longer-running Star Trek Voyager series. I did find out, though, that the voice of Grandma herself was provided by none other than Piper Laurie, although that was an uncredited role for some reason. Back to the synopsis. How chilling was that clip, friends? Her brother mentioning that of late dogs haven't returned home with pieces of human meat in their mouths? He specifically questions his sisters why they should think the trail of evil has stopped.
It would appear as if Grandma kept the county folk in line, thanks to her gift in the dark arts.
We learn more about that just a few moments later, as Georgie is wrestling with his own thoughts. Like, what is he going to do if his grandma happens to pass while he is all alone, etc. He reaches his grandmother's bedside in her yellowed and pudgy arm, with a hand that has very talon-like sharp fingernails, I should add, shoots up towards him, like she's trying to grab him, which, as you might imagine, startles the young boy, dropping her teacup where it shatters on the floor, giving we the viewers an interesting image. The tea itself is steaming on the floor. This isn't just a hot cup of tea, it's practically boiling, and it looks to be spilling between the floorboards. In the safety of the kitchen, Georgie wrestles with what he should do. His inner turmoil in this episode comes through thanks to voiceovers by Oliver, who really does a fine job carrying this episode.
And that is what I pointed out to Sage, dear listeners. That in this segment of the Twilight Zone, it feels as if the voiceovers were added as a second thought. Perhaps an early viewing of the segment left the audience questioning the motives of Georgie.
I don't think so, my friend. For one thing, the original story had the same inner monologue. In fact, more than a few of the lines are exact quotes from the King's story. Ellison really did a great job of boiling down the 31 pages of the short story, hitting all the highlights, and in some cases, expanding on them too. Georgie remembers a little more of conversation between his mother and aunt and uncle. Sounds like his poor mom didn't have much say in the matter of watching over her mother. Her brother, Jim, as we learn, compares their mother to the likes of Typhoid Mary. It's evident that everyone in the family is just as terrified of the infirmed woman as Georgie. Hoping that she's gone to sleep, the young boy tiptoes back into her bedroom to clean up the spilled tea, which is now cooled, just in time for the storm to have arrived. We can hear the thunder, and we see the lightning illuminate the old woman's small bedroom. As he mops up the mess with a cloth, Georgie notices that there's a hidden compartment under the floorboards. Using a pocket knife, he pries open some loose boards and is greeted by a blast of energy that knocks him back as a bright red light erupts from underneath, with the addition of moaning voices from somewhere. The young boy thinks to himself that this must surely be a portal to hell. But when he approaches it, he remarks that it's not blazingly hot, but instead icy cold. This curious incident that should have sent him screaming from not just the bedroom, but the house, doesn't stop Georgie from reaching down into the bright hole when he spies something. Books, which, he mentions, he has overheard the adults whisper about before. Taking them, Georgie darts out of his grandmother's bedroom.
Which means the young lad is not present to see his grandma. With a contented sigh, pointing towards that portal to the underworld. Then, the hidden compartment seals itself afterwards.
Yeah. The next scene finds Georgie at the kitchen table, reading from one of his grandma's books. A little something called The Necronomicon. Fright fans? For those of us who dig the works of H.P. Lovecraft, a few names he mentions pop out, like Haster, Yog-Sothoth, and even Cthulhu. Ellison's script even lets the character play around with the pronunciation of the Great Old One's name, before the young boy mentions it's a stupid name.
The dear boy is more interested in the diary he managed to pull forth from the screaming hole under the floorboards. His grandmother is a witch, perhaps turning to such dark arts as she couldn't conceive a child herself, yes?
It certainly sounds like that is the case from what Georgie is saying out loud. He also learns that, due to her giving into the powers of the old ones, she was kicked out of the church. As he is reading from her diary, a pact she wrote with Cthulhu, his grandmother begins to cry out in her strangled voice, calling on what sounds like Cthulhu before she suddenly goes silent. Long moments pass before Georgie creeps into her room, and it looks like the worst has happened. That his grandmother has passed away. She is unresponsive to his calls, and he plays through his head what he might be able to tell Dr. Arlander when he remembers that in movies he has seen detectives hold up a mirror to a person's face to check for their breath. Georgie tries, but doesn't see anything. His courage at being so near the large and lifeless form of his grandmother breaks as lightning strikes nearby. He rushes back into the kitchen to call Dr. Arlander, but the party line is busy, and it seems that the storm is affecting it, or something else, as the gossiping Mrs. Dodd isn't even able to hear him shouting into the receiver. The kid is definitely in a bad situation, and some dark thoughts go through his head, mostly about his brother. After all, if Buddy hadn't broken his leg, he wouldn't be alone in the house, during a violent thunderstorm, all alone, with Grandma.
That is when a little voice whispers in the recesses of his mind that he should do the right thing and go back into his grandmother's room and cover her face.
Georgie is definitely a kid with a good heart and manages to pull himself up and enter his grandmother's bedroom, saying to himself, almost like a mantra, how much he doesn't want to be doing this. But he has to. As he is raising the blanket over her bloated face, she lashes out to grab his arm. Briefly, we can see her eyes are glowing red and distorted. Georgie screams out for her to let him go, and she begins growling like some kind of beast. But he manages to break her grip. But the witch, using her magic, shuts and locks the door before he's able to escape. All the while, in a disturbingly sweet, demonic-sounding voice, Grandma mentions she wants to hug him, that Georgie was always her favorite. The young boy screams as he is drawn towards her bed and into her embrace, and it appears as if Georgie is sucked into either the bed itself or possibly is absorbed into his grandmother. The scene switches to Georgie's mom arriving at home. She's complaining about the storm. Apparently, trees were blown down, and it took her longer than expected to get back. Georgie, we see, is full of remorse, his head bent over his homework, mumbling to his mother that Grandma has passed away. His mother, with tears in her eyes, does her best to comfort her son with an embrace, making sure, of course, to let him know that it wasn't his fault, not to blame himself. A reminder that Grandma isn't really gone, that she'll always be with them in spirit.
Which is when Georgie opens his eyes wide and looks at the camera. They are red, like Grandma's, and cat-like. It would appear that George's mother doesn't know the half of it. Her mother is with them, in the dear boy's body.
And that very disturbing image is how the 1986 Twilight Zone adaptation of Stephen King's Grandma comes to a close. When I first saw that, I won't lie, it really shook me. It scared me. For one thing, like I mentioned earlier, I knew Barrett Oliver from The NeverEnding Story, and I wasn't ready to see him get absorbed by some great evil. When my father called it a day and came inside the house to make dinner, I told him the whole episode, talking a mile a minute, trying not to leave anything out. Sadly, my father wouldn't get a chance to see the episode himself until it hit syndication. But that very night, he did get to hear it. You see, in my neck of the woods, in my youth, a local radio station actually played the audio of CBS TV shows after midnight. The next morning, he told me that it sounded even more scarier than the way I had described it. Projectionist, I think you picked out some vintage audio treats from the vault for the listeners, right?
I most certainly did. With the aid of both intern Rockford J and Preston Griffith, the vault librarian, I managed to locate two television advertisements that I feel the dear listeners will appreciate.
And now it's time for that extra special part of the show. You know the one I mean.
The Twilight Zone. It's back. It's new. The astonishment, the power, the fear, and the magic.
Wow! How about that?
A season of all new shows.
But don't go away, kids, because there's lots more fun ahead.
Once again, you'll find yourself lost in the Twilight Zone.
Every Saturday night at 9 on KPTV 12.
It's back. It's more frightening than before. Stephen King's epic The Stand. Experience the terror of 350 pages you weren't allowed to see before.
This $24.95 hardcover is yours for just $7.95 when you enter the chilling world of the Stephen King Library.
Imagine an exclusive collection of horror, Pet Sematary, The Shining, Christine, the chart toppers, the books that became blockbuster movies. All in original hardcovers at just $14.95 each, all with a cancel anytime guarantee. But if you want the terror to last, we'll send you a new volume, including King's new releases about every 7 weeks. Enjoy each for 10 days. There's never an obligation to buy. Possess The Stand with no risk. The Stephen King Library, where the master is coming back to haunt you.
Call 1-800-421-7600 now to get The Stand. Keep it and pay $7.95 plus shipping and handling. Future volumes will come, one every 7 weeks, each with a 10-day free trial. Keep only the ones you want. Cancel anytime.
Friends, on the few episodes where we've discussed the 1985 Twilight Zone revival, or New Twilight Zone, if you will, I've pointed out again and again that it didn't, in my mind, fit with what Serling and so many writers had laid the foundation of with the original series. However, I've been quick to point out, I think, that I was not blind to how many solid offerings this new Twilight Zone had to offer. Grandma is obviously one of those. In fact, I believe tonight, at least at the time of this recording, on MeTV, they are actually going to be showing this episode. So, definitely tune in and catch it if you can. For what it might be worth, I know that in the April 1986 issue of Castle Rock, the Stephen King newsletter, they were quite impressed by the episode, especially the screenplay by Harlan Ellison. For new Twilight Zone episodes that really gave me a shiver, I think Grandma is near the top, maybe followed by The Elevator and Nightcrawlers. That latter, by the way, was directed by William Friedkin of The Exorcist fame. What was that?
that sounded like a vent below the control room being pried open, Victor.
Is that the ghoul fever-infected plague rat?
Yes. Perhaps this would be the opportune time to call security.
Friends, I think that is about all we have to say about the fantastic grandma. We appreciate you taking the time to join us on this podcast. The music you heard at the beginning and ending of our podcast was provided by Peachy. If you have musical needs, you can contact him at peachy@retroist.com. My co-host, The Projectionist, has his own Facebook page, Projectionist Haunted Drive-In. He generally shares old movie posters and newspaper advertisements throughout the week. It's always neat to see what vintage thing he can dig up to share. A huge thank you to Rockford J. You can find him every day sharing his own love of retro horror on the Saturday Frights Facebook page.
Oh boy.
As for myself, you can still find me posting a couple times a day on not just the Saturday Frights page, but the Diary of an Arcade Employee page too. I even managed to find time to share some things on the Retroist Clubhouse on Facebook now and again. Saturday Frights has an Instagram account, by the way. If you want to check it out, you can find it. It's simply Saturday_Frights. If you'd like to contact me with suggestions for future episodes, you can reach me at VicSage@Retroist.com. Of course, we owe a great deal of gratitude to the Retroist himself, not just for hosting the podcast, but for allowing us for nearly 10 years to share our love of all things retro. If you want to read the best collection of retro-related articles and podcasts, hop on over to theretroist.com. If you like the show, consider subscribing and giving us a rating over on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify to help spread the word. Helping us to find new listeners is always appreciated. Now, let's listen to a clip from the subject of our next matinee show, assuming we aren't eaten alive here in a few minutes.
I'm the projectionist. I'm the curator of 100 years of nightmares. Trapped in a silver screen that never forgets.
This has been a Retroist production. Sleep well and goodbye.